why we love the Song Dynasty, exploring the history and charm of one of China's most fascinating dynasties. Episode 5, Confucianism 2.0. Belief at the beginning of the Song Dynasty was in a bit of a mess. A little Buddhism, a dash of Taoism, and a hefty dose of Confucianism were all vying for popularity. In the next few podcasts, we are going to take a look at the importance, in particular, of Confucianism to the Song Dynasty, or more correctly, Neo-Confucianism. I'm Bob Jones, and in this Why We Love the Song Dynasty podcast, I'm throwing the spotlight on what was to become one of China's most iconic dynasties in the country's long and colourful history. At the beginning of the Song Dynasty, there was no single belief system in operation. What you believed often depended on your place in society, your economic status, and your aim in life, if indeed you had one. As the years progressed, however, an upgraded version of Confucianism came to the fore and was picked up and popularized by the social elites. It became the in thing. But it's probably a good idea to spend a few moments looking at each belief system in turn as a means of setting the scene. Let's look at them in the order that they appeared in China. Starting with Confucianism, which was based on the teachings of the iconic Chinese philosopher and politician Confucius, who lived between 551 and 479 BC. In simple terms, at its core, Confucianism teaches that human beings are fundamentally good and teachable, improvable, and perfectible through personal and communal endeavor, especially self-cultivation and self-creation. It places a big emphasis on respect of one's parents, elders, and ancestors. The four basic concepts are respect for self-control, kindness, try to do no harm, and common justice. Put even more simply, Confucianism believes that you should be nice to yourself and to others. But it wasn't really a religion. There was no god or supernatural force to believe in, for example. It was more a way of living your life. Buddhism was next in line. It first reached China about 2,000 years ago and was probably brought to the country along the Silk Road by traders from India. Again, put simply, Buddhism believes that suffering is part of life, but you can be liberated from it by cultivating wisdom, virtue, and concentration. It became very popular and elbowed Confucianism out of the way. But it reached its peak under the Tang Dynasty, the last major dynasty before the Song. Buddhist arts flourished and monasteries grew rich and powerful, but then for all sorts of reasons it fell out of favor and more than 4,000 monasteries and 40,000 small rural temples and shrines were destroyed. Buddhism was never again to be as dominant in Chinese society. However, many of its beliefs and practices were taken on board Taoism and also into a later reboot of Confucianism. Then enter Taoism, or Taoism. They are one and the same. This is a Chinese philosophy attributed to a chap called Lao Tzu, around about 500 BC. He believed in living a simple and balanced life in harmony with nature. He taught that everyone should be able to live together peacefully, especially if they are mindful of how their thoughts and actions affect themselves, others, and the earth. The Tao, or Tao, is a cosmic force that flows through all things and binds them together or splits them apart. Taoists are most likely to say, "Let's go with the flow," and naturally enough, was most popular in the countryside because of its focus on the natural world, the coming and going of the seasons, the ebb and flow of the tides. Taoism was the official religion of the Tang, though Buddhism was actually more popular during the reigns of several emperors of the dynasty. Unlike Buddhism, Taoism arose from the observations and beliefs of the Chinese people. It's a homegrown belief system, Chinese through and through. As mentioned in earlier shows, the Song dynasty was actually quite weak militarily. But in cultural and economic terms, it was an absolute powerhouse. Technological advances in agriculture, textiles, lacquerwork, porcelain painting, maritime trade, and weaponry demonstrated that China could excel in the fine arts as well as in the sciences. The Song's commercial revolution produced flourishing markets, densely populated urban centers, elaborate communication networks, theatrical performances, literary groups, and, curiously, an interest, or maybe better described as a need, for a popular religion. Why would this be? The Song dynasty saw a decline of the aristocracy and the widespread availability of printed books. The democratization of education and the implementation of an examination system which produced a new social class, the gentry, which was noted for its literary proficiency, social consciousness, and political participation. This was a perfect breeding ground for the revival of Confucianism, which soon came to influence all aspects of society. Leading thinkers of the time developed a comprehensive humanist vision in which cultivation of the self was combined with social ethics and moral metaphysics. In the eyes of the Song literati, this new philosophy faithfully restored the classical Confucian insights and successfully applied them to the concerns of their own age, with a slight twist. Basically, it came down to the notion that self-cultivation requires reverence of the self, society, and the world around you, plus the extension of knowledge by the investigation of things. Along with the revival of Confucian teachings, however, came a layer of mysticism, like a fall of snow. Confucius's own teachings, recorded by his followers in the Analects or Selected Sayings, were still a central element of the belief system, as were the texts that came to be called the Confucian classics, which included early poetry, historical records, moral and ritual necessities, and a divination manual. But Confucianism came out fighting against the popular supernatural elements of Buddhism and Taoism. Because they were being so analytical nowadays, they needed to come up not only with nice ways to live your life, but also explanations of how we all got here and why things good and bad happened to us. It was all part of the grand recipe for a virtuous and harmonious society and state. Importantly, central to all this was the family, and maybe, perhaps, by extension, society as a whole as one big family. Everyone was expected to respect and obey his or her parents and put the interests of the family before personal interests. It was considered essential that everyone should marry so that family lines would continue. This attitude of filial piety extended also to ancestors, thanks to the new spirituality contained in Confucianism. Male heirs were expected to make offerings of food and drink to their deceased ancestors. Many of these practices are still common in today's China. All these innovations came together to become Neo-Confucianism. Okay, so, if you were walking along the Bien River in Kaifeng during the Qingming Festival, or sauntering through the streets of the city one evening, how did this new or Neo-Confucianism manifest itself in Song society? You might, perhaps, have seen people reading intently, sitting quietly, practicing rituals, taking physical exercise, creating calligraphy, doing sums, and generally making scientific observations. Life was a quest for self-knowledge. People were kind and polite and generous and helpful. But in their quest for self-development and success, Confucianism had given them the key. Something that was not to be found in its original form, something had been missing up until the Song Dynasty. What the Song Dynasty did was pick up the basics of Confucianism, add the best parts of Taoism and the spiritual, ritual side of Buddhism and fuse them together, rewrite the rulebook, and then get everyone to follow the new rules. And maybe that's typical of the Song Dynasty. Pick the best parts and refine them. Turn living life into an art form. An attitude to life that perhaps sees many echoes throughout Chinese history. The rebrand, reboot, upgraded Confucianism as practiced by the Song Dynasty was all about celebrating the self in society. It was about feeling at peace with one's surroundings, creating and bettering yourself and the world around you. It was about being kind and being seen to be kind. Basically, it was all about being nice to one another. Special thanks go out to San Lian Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time.
This has been a China Plus podcast. If you like the show, please give us a rating and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen. If you've got any questions or feedback, please feel free to contact us via email at podcast@cri.com.cn or find us on Twitter, China Plus Pods.